ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Spoken by Queen Kunti from the first part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Put forth by His divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta. Perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord. To cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements, like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others, because this is a symptom of life. The symptoms of life, such as desire, anger, hankerings, feeling of attraction, etc., cannot be annihilated. Only the objective has to be changed. Desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service, the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord, in place of desire for sense gratification. The so-called affection of family, society, country, etc., consists of different phases of sense gratification. When this desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, it is called devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, we can see that Arjuna desired not to fight with his brothers and relations just to satisfy his own personal desires. But when he heard the message of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he changed his decision and served the Lord. And for his doing so, he became a famous devotee of the Lord, for it is declared in all the scriptures that Arjuna attained spiritual perfection by the devotional service to the Lord in friendship. The fighting was there, the friendship was there, Arjuna was there, and Krishna was there. But Arjuna became a different person by devotional service. Therefore, the prayers of Kunti also indicate the same categorical changes in activities. Srimati Kunti wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something which is non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, that is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted that perfection and prayed for it from the Lord. Kunti, have served as a guiding light for innumerable aspiring devotees and even great paramhamsas for the past many thousands and thousands of years. In this particular place in the Bhagavatam, what Kunti has gone through in life
previous to offering these prayers. We read in the Mahabharata that when she was just a child, she was so loving, so charming in all her mannerisms, so much anxious to serve and to please. Even though she was a queen, she was a princess at the time. She was the sister of Vasudev, the daughter of Surasen. But Surasen had a very close friendship with one king of the name Kunti Bhoj, who had no daughter. So Surasen handed over his daughter to this king to take care of and love and protect as his own. Her name was Prita, but due to living in the palace of Kunti Bhoja, she became known also as Kunti. Even though she had such immense riches, so many servants, she always remained in a very menial service attitude, even from her childhood. This is culture. Culture is when we train our children how to be loving servants, how to be always trying to please, especially great souls. Generally, we find the children are very selfish and very disobedient and very much self-centered. They want to keep things, they want to possess things, they fight over things and everything else. They want attention. But Queen Kunti was prayed in such a spirit, I mean, she was raised in such a spiritual atmosphere that she was simply always aspiring for the loving service of her father, of her friends, and especially of the great sadhus that came to their home. And one who pleases the Lord's devotees, one who pleases the great souls, they are given the greatest fortune. In fact, the greatest fortune is in that service itself. We should aspire for nothing else. So when Durvas Muni came to visit the king, in her usual self, she served him with such love and such kindness and such humility that she melted his heart. So he gave her a benediction that with this mantra, any demigod you call will come. So one day, early in the morning, when the sun was rising, she saw the beautiful glory of Surya's manifestation. So she called the sun god with this mantra, not really knowing how serious this really was to call the sun god. So he came, and she offered her respectful obeisances and served him with great love and devotion. She was a child, and he said, now I want to give you a benediction. And she said, I really do not want any benediction. I just chanted the mantra, and now you're here, and having your darshan is very nice. He said, no, I want to give you a benediction of having a child. Having a child, but I'm not even married, and I'm just a young girl. What will people say? And if a young girl loses her chastity, what respectable man will ever want to marry her? They said, no, I will give you a child and preserve your chastity. For the demigods, this is no problem. You will have it within a few minutes. No one will even know. So in this way, he did like this, and then he left. And soon she had child, you know the story, and she was thinking, what to do with this child? I love this child. I love this child more than I love my life. But what will be the reputation of my father? What will be the reputation of the whole kingdom? What will be the consequences of all the citizens if they lose faith in the ruler and his family? So she didn't know what to do. She couldn't consult anyone, and she was only a child. It was a tremendous responsibility. So she put child in basket and put it along the Ganges. In her heart, she was always remembering that child, her firstborn, who was meant to be the king, but God knows where he has gone. Later on, she married King Pandu. Pandu was a very, very great chivalrous king and a very great devotee of the Lord. But in this world, things rarely go the way we want them to go. In fact, if everything's going the way we want it to go, we must be doing something wrong. This is the way a devotee thinks. A materialist thinks we must be doing something right. A devotee means we must be doing something wrong. Because if everything goes the way you want, there's no need for God in your life. It's all just a superficial belief. So Queen Kunti, she had a husband, Pandu. Somehow or other, while he was hunting, he shot, I believe it was a deer, that was just about, no, or was it a Brahmin? He thought it was a deer, but it was actually a Brahmin who was just about to have a child with his wife. So the wife became very angry. What you have done? I have to give you a curse that if you ever go to touch your wife to have a child, you will die. So this was very terrible news for Kunti. And she had a co-wife, Madri. Here they were, young princesses, and they were not allowed to have children with their husband. But Queen Kunti told her husband that I have this benediction, you know. I could call demigods. Then you call demigods and you have children with them. She said, no, how could I have children with anyone but you? No, it is my order. So out of utter obedience, she called Dharmaraj, then Vayu, then Indra, then the Aswini Kumaras. In this way, she had five children. Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev. And they were all children. One day, Pandu approached Madri to embrace her, and he died. And Madri entered the fire. So here is this young lady, Kunti. She has five children. They were living in the forest together. And husband is gone, dead. She was not allowed to enter the fire with them. She wanted. But they said, the sages in the forest said, you must take care of these children. They are young. And knowing that her children were the heirs to the throne, she saw how Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra were always conspiring to kill them, to persecute them, to torture them, to humiliate them. They sent them to house in Varnataka, so-called vacation, just to burn them. Kunti was there. They had to escape and hide underground through tunnels. And later on, there was a great championship match where Dronacharya wanted to show the prowess of all of his students. And during this match, Arjuna, he utterly defeated everyone by his great craftsmanship of shooting his bows and arrows. And just at that time, arrows started flying in upon the stage and performing such miraculous mystical powers that they completely overshadowed Arjuna's. And they were thinking, who is this person? And then he came in. And he had the kavacha and the kundalas of Vivaswan's son. And Kunti recognized that this is my eldest son, Radheya. And Arjuna was very angry with him. And they became instant worst enemies, her most beloved child and her other most beloved child. And then Duryodhana saw that here is someone who could destroy the Pandavas. So he made alliance. So here Kunti was watching that my eldest son, who is actually the most beloved of all my children, he is joined with the enemy and is bitterly against my other five beloved children. And she could not say anything to anyone. She could only faint, fall unconscious. And many years she had to pass in this secrecy, being tormented from within and without by the terrible persecution upon her beloved children. When the battle of Kurukshetra was about to be fought, it is described that Karna, what he would do, he was by his, although he did not know who his father was, he had very natural love and devotion toward Vivaswan, the sun god. So every day, just at sunrise, he would do puja and offer worship to the sun god. And he made a vow that whoever asks anything at that time of me, I will give them. So Indra knew that there's only one person on earth that can defeat and kill Arjuna, and that is Karna, Radheya. And he cannot be defeated as long as he has his kavacha and kundala. He's indestructible. So he disguised himself as a Brahmin to beg charity at that auspicious time in the morning. But what happened is, Surya appeared to him in a mystical way and said, the Brahmin will come tomorrow. It's really Indra. He's going to want to take from you what makes you indestructible. Do not give it to him. Karna said, I have made a vow. I cannot break my vow. So Indra came. Ah, you have come at the time of charity. What do you want? I want your kundal and kavacha, but it is part of my body. How can you take it? He said, but you have made this vow. You please give it. Because he was the son of Prita, the son of Kunti, he had such a high sense of honor that with his sword, with an arrow, he cut, blood profusely flowing everywhere. He cut from his chest and he cut from his ears what he was born with and offered them to Indra. Then he realized that he had become a fallible man. But for the sense of truth, he was willing to be so. Some days later, Queen Kunti appeared at that auspicious time. He never knew who his mother was. He longed throughout his life to know his mother, to love his mother. Throughout his life, he was rejected by all society for being of a lower caste. He was never accepted within the arena of other Kshatriyas because of his lower birth, although by nature he was the most powerful and greatest of all Kshatriyas. It was only Duryodhana, the first person in his life who was kind to him, besides his own stepmother, his adopted mother. So Kunti came to him. At that time, and she begged him, first she wanted to reveal to her, to him who she was. She explained to him the whole story, that I am your mother. When he heard these words, his heart, filled with love for her, began to embrace. You can imagine Kunti, after so many long years of depriving this child of even knowing what his birth was or who she was, what an intimate exchange it was for both of them. And then she explained to him that you are the eldest son. When Yudhisthira receives this news, he will gladly hand over the whole throne to you, and he and all the other brothers will be your servants throughout their lives. Do not fight against your beloved brothers. Do not kill them. Take the side of the Pandavas, and the throne will be yours. This is the benediction I ask. He said, my dear mother, now that I am with you and loving you, my life's great desire has been fulfilled. Now that I know that the Pandavas are my brothers, I love them more than I love my very life. But still, I have made a vow to Duryodhana. I would never betray him. Therefore, I cannot. When you and my brothers and everyone in the world rejected me, he was the only one to stand at my side and show me friendship. And if I take the other side, he will be defeated. And if I take his side, I will die. That is for sure. Because Krishna is on the side of the Pandavas, and Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and anyone against Krishna will be vanquished. Yudhisthira will be king, the Pandavas will win this war, and if I take the side of Duryodhana, I will be killed. But I have given my word to him, and I cannot reverse that. Kunti pleaded, begged him, how can you fight against your own brothers? So he resolved in his mind he would not fight in this battle of Kurukshetra. So he had a good plan. He and Bhishma never got along. Because Bhishma, Vidura, and Kunti, they were the only ones who knew his true identity. How did Bhishma and Vidura know? Because when he first came into that assembly, and Kunti fainted, they were so clever and intelligent, they could understand why she must have fainted. And to honor her, they never told anyone. So Bhishma, who understood the glory of the Pandavas, being such great devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, he was always very, very much in a loving mood chastising Karna for being against his brothers without telling him why. So when Bhishma was made the commander-in-chief of the Kuru army, Karna said, if he's commander-in-chief, I cannot get along with him. There's no way I can fight. So I will not fight this war. If Bhishma, if he is dead or he cannot fight, only then will I come. So Duryodhana was thinking, with Bhishma, what do we need anyone else for? Of course, after several days of the battle, by the will of Bhishma himself, he instructed the Pandavas how he would be immobilized and put into a bed of arrows. At that time, Karna was requested by Duryodhana, and he had to fight. Karna promised Kunti. She begged him, please do not kill my children, because you have the power to kill them all. He said, I vow to you, I will not kill Yudhisthira, I will not kill Bhima, I will not kill Nakula or Sahadev, but I cannot vow to not kill Arjuna. So in various times of this war, he completely defeated Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, and Sahadev, and he practically put the arrow right to the head, where he had them in a utterly helpless condition, ready to kill them, and then he let them go. And they couldn't understand. He is our worst enemy. He could have killed us. Why did he let us go? It was a great mystery. It was incomprehensible. And of course, during the fight with Arjuna, Arjuna could not kill him himself. Only with the help of Krishna. When he was unarmed, unprepared, Krishna told Arjuna, you must kill him. Now, who suffered the most? Queen Kunti was hearing all the news. Her son, her eldest son, her beloved Karna, was killed by her other beloved son, Arjuna. Can you imagine how much that broke her heart? How much she suffered? And after the whole battle was finished, Yudhisthira Maharaj was performing the last rites for all of his relatives who had died in the battlefield. At that time, Queen Kunti, when Yudhisthira and his brothers were ready to leave to go back to Hastinapur, she should not keep silent any longer. In her heart, she was feeling, I have deprived my dearest, most beloved, eldest child for all these years. Now he is dead. I have deprived him throughout his life. He has no relatives, he has no family. He has no one to perform his last rites. I cannot deny him now. She said to Maharaj Yudhisthira that you have forgotten one of your dear relatives. You must perform the last rites for him. Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was a very thorough and complete manager. He said, Mother, you are wrong. I have very, very specifically and very thoroughly seen to the last rites every one of our descendants and every one of our forefathers and all of relatives. She said, no, there is one more. He said, not possible. You show me this one more. She said, you come with me. Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev, they were completely perplexed. Has our mother gone crazy? There's no one else who was related to us on this battlefield. So they followed her. They walked a long distance. And they came to the place where Karna was laying with a severed head. Queen Kunti, with her voice choked up, with the heartbreak of a mother that has lost her beloved child, she said, "This is your brother." And Yudhisthira looked. He said, "This is our worst enemy. This is a Sutaputra. This is a low-class son of a carpenter. This is Radheya. What are you talking? Have you gone mad?" And all of them, the Pandavas, they could not believe what she was saying. What was going through Yudhisthira's mind? Yudhisthira knew that without Arjuna, they could not win this war. And Yudhisthira knew that only Karna could kill him. Therefore, throughout the entire battle, Yudhisthira's burning desire was that Karna be killed. No matter how much victory and success were coming in the daily battles, his mind was always constantly disturbed at the thought that Karna will kill Arjuna. Not only Yudhisthira, but all the Pandavas. In the back of their minds constantly was that Radheya must be killed somehow or other. It was the fulfillment of their greatest desire that Arjuna be liberated from the possibility of this man's mighty arrows. He was their worst and most feared enemy in all the world. And Kunti was saying that we should perform the last rites for him? They were shocked. Queen Kunti could not even speak. Tears were flowing from her lotus eyes. Upon seeing the slayed body of Karna, her sons were looking. Why is she so much crying for him? She has not cried so much for any of our close relatives and friends who we performed the last rites for. And then she spoke. And she told them the whole story. There was complete silence. As they were listening to this narration of how their eldest brother the first and most illustrious of all the children of Kunti was Radheya. When the Pandavas, they could not believe it. They began to weep, tears flowing profusely. Their hearts were broken that our own beloved brother, we hated him throughout our life, and ultimately we killed him completely unfairly. Yudhisthira and his brothers all claimed that all the deaths of all the millions of soldiers who have been killed on this battlefield, and all the grief and lamentation that we feel for all of them, is not even a drop compared to the ocean of grief we are feeling now for the death of our brother. Why, my mother, did you never tell us this? And then Yudhisthira asked the question, which was the most heartbreaking question. And the answer to this question devastated their hearts. He asked her, "You kept this a secret from us. Therefore, we hated him vengefully and simply prayed and aspired to kill him. But did he know that we were his brothers?" And she replied, "Throughout his entire life, he never knew." But on that fateful day, when I came to him, when he was offering his worship to Suryadev, I revealed who I was to him. And he told me then that it was the happiest, the only joyful moment he ever experienced in his entire life, to come together with his loving mother. And he told me that after hearing this news and after experiencing the embrace of my love, that he loved you five children of mine more than he loved his own life. He told me that it would be impossible for him to fight with any anger or hate toward any of you because of his love for you. I begged him, "Come, join your brothers. You will be the emperor, the king of all the world, and you will live lovingly, intimately with all of us for the rest of your life." Radheya told me that they are on the side of Krishna. They will be victorious. I will be killed in that war. But I promise you one thing, I will not kill them. But I have made my vow, and better death than the breaking of that vow. Then the Pandavas began to remember how Karna had them all in helpless conditions, ready to kill them, but he did not. Now they understood why. That although we were fighting in that battle, hating him and wanting to kill him, he was always compassionate and loving toward us. And ultimately, we killed him. And they all just sat down, utterly grief-stricken. And who was the most grief-stricken? Queen Kunti. She had to see the conditions of her five brought sons. She never wanted to put him that misery, but she had to in order for the last rites to be performed for her eldest. So Yudhisthira performed the last rites, and in solemn silence they returned to Hastinapur, not at all joyous that they won the war. There was no celebration. There was no festival for victory. There was only broken hearts. So then Lord Sri Krishna in Hastinapur, he arranged for the coronation of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Now all enemies, all adversaries to the Pandavas were annihilated. Now the whole world worshipped them and accepted them as the kings. Now their rightful position in Hastinapur had been returned to them. And after Krishna so mercifully protected the principles of Dharma and protected his devotees against all odds, he was ready to leave for Dwarka. And at this time, Queen Kunti approaches Krishna. And her prayers are the prayers of a person who has seen problems and sufferings that practically no human being could have possibly lived through in their lives. But is she praying, "Thank you for relieving me from all these sufferings"? She's praying, "My dear Lord, I am feeling more fearful now than ever before. Because when everything was going terrible, I had nowhere else to turn to except your lotus feet. I had no other shelter, no other refuge. But now that everything is very nice, the tendency will be very strong that I will forget you. That I will superficially offer my prayers and my puja to you, but not with a helpful heart seeking shelter. Therefore, let these calamities, let these problems, let these sufferings come again and again and again into my life, because in the face of them, I am always remembering you. And in remembrance of you, there is no birth or death." She is praying, "Please, Krishna, sever all material affections for even my family members if they divert my attention anyway away from you. You are the only object of love. You are the only object of refuge. You are the only goal in life. Please, my Lord, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else." Srila Narottam Das Thakur has prayed, "In happiness and distress, in pleasure and pain, I only have you, my Lord, Sri Krishna. I have nothing else." And Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, "I have seen and considered all the 14 worlds, and my conclusion is, without you, Krishna, there's no one and nothing that can save me." This is the path of bhakti. To put no one before Krishna in our life. In the Bible, one of the Ten Commandments is to put no other god before the Supreme God. That anyone in this world that we put between ourselves and God, that we give importance to before God, in our life, we put that person as a god before the Supreme God. Whether it be our business, whether it be our family members, if we give more importance to anyone or anything before our loving devotion to the Lord, Krishna will never reveal himself to you. Bhishma explained on the bed of arrows that love means to repose all one's affection in one object. And Krishna, you are the only object that can be the reciprocator of all of our affection. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining in this purport that it is natural to have affection. After all, Queen Kunti had so much affection for her children. How she cried, how she wept in various circumstances. But those natural human emotions never allowed her heart to deviate even the slightest bit from her loving service to the Lord, from her complete surrender and obedience to the will of the Lord. She was grateful for any situation in life, seeing the beauty of God's love behind it all. And therefore, being grateful does not mean you do not express the human emotions of Queen Kunti, but in her heart of hearts, she is praying, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone or anything else. When the Ganges flows from Gangotri to the Bay of Bengal, it is several thousands of miles. The current of the Ganges never stops. Nothing could stop the current of the Ganga. No problem, no situation, no attachment should stop our flow of affection toward Krishna. And in essence, this is what the final teaching of Gita means. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. To perform your worldly duties is dharma. Krishna explains, abandon all varieties of dharma. Surrender to me. And what is surrender? Surrender is on a external platform, obedience to the order of Guru and Krishna. Because Krishna is coming, his word, his love is coming through the spiritual master and the great Vaishnavas. But the internal quality of surrender is the direction in which the river of affection flows from our heart. Therefore, a devotee loves his family members, a devotee loves his friends, a devotee loves his society members only in its relationship with Krishna. Without the connection of Krishna, a devotee has absolutely no regard for anything or anyone. If it is the will of Krishna for me to take care of these people, out of love for him, I will love them and care for them. But it will all be as an act of surrender to his lotus feet. What do I love about them? Only the presence of Krishna within their hearts. Outside of that, it is all an illusion. It is all Maya. It is all bondage. Ultimately, it is all the cause of suffering. These celebrated prayers of Queen Kunti, Krishna spoke this most sublime and important philosophy through the mouth of a mother, not a great scholar, not a great pundit, not a sannyasi, but a woman, a simple lady, a mother. He wanted to show the world that it is this quality of faith and trust and one-pointed love in his service that is the most glorious attribute and the only means of attracting the heart of Krishna. Just like Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, the prayers of Kunti are perhaps the most important prayers for all Vaishnavas to hear and chant. They are spoken by a woman, a mother, a housewife in one sense. This is very important to understand. And even the greatest scholars of the Vedanta, and even the greatest Paramahamsa sannyasis who have rejected everything of this world for the loving service of the Lord, they all fall at the feet of Queen Kunti to hear her prayers. These prayers are their life and soul. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you, without being diverted to anyone else. She prays in the previous verse, O Lord of the universe, please sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. What does it mean? She did not leave her family and take sannyas. But she is praying to sever the tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and Vrishnis. She wanted to sever that tie of that illusion of I and mine within the heart. That this is my children. This is my family. This is my dynasty. This is my caste. This is all an illusion, and one cannot love you as long as one is caught up in this web of illusion. Let me love them only because they are part and parcel of you, my Lord. If I love you, let me love all your parts and parcels only because of their relationship with you and for no external reasons of designations. Because as long as we are attached to any of these external designations, you cannot love Krishna. This is Krishna consciousness. So how to develop that one-pointed love and affection towards Sri Krishna? Queen Kunti explains, by keeping your consciousness always with him. There are 9 processes of devotional service by which we can always keep our consciousness connected to Krishna. And through that association, naturally our love for Krishna awakens. By coming to the temple, by associating with Krishna's devotees. Why do we associate, if we understand that the devotees, that they are Krishna's representatives in my life, love for them is love for Krishna. Love for Guru is love for Krishna. As long as Krishna is always in the center of our relationships. Love for our family members is love of Krishna as long as Krishna is in the center of all of our interactions and the service to Krishna is the object of our relationships. Then love for them is love for Krishna. But if our affection for them diverts us from the will of Guru and Krishna, then our so-called love for them is only lust, which is a cause of bondage. So in every situation of life, we could really learn how to love one another, how to repose that natural affection that is our nature amongst each other by keeping Krishna in the center. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained, there is no process that is more powerful in bringing the love of people's hearts together in the flow of Krishna consciousness than the congregational chanting of his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. It's like the Queen Kunti is praying, let my heart's love be like the Ganges flowing only to you, represented by the sea. So if every devotee is aspiring in this direction, when we come together for kirtan, it is a massive confluence. It's like at Prayag, the Ganga, Jamuna, Saraswati, they all meet. And it's such a holy place. But wherever the congregational chanting of the holy name takes place, it is far more purifying that place, far more holy than even Prayag. Because you have several hundred Ganges of people's hearts all making a confluence, all meeting together at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radhan Gopinath. And this confluence, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains, of the love of the devotees coming together through the congregational chanting of the holy name, if it is done sincerely, it can flood the whole universe with love of God. And that is our goal. That is the mission of Guru Maharaj, to flood the whole world with the nectar of love of God. And this is the process they have given us. By simply learning how to sincerely come together to chant the holy names and keep our consciousness on Krishna and keep our life always directed according to these beautiful prayers of Kunti, we can flood the world with love of God.